America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
All right, we are back in your lives. It's Inside Boxing Live. Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri, powered by PPV.com. Stream your boxing events on PPV.com to your tablet, to your smartphone, to your big screen TV. No lag, great stream. Live interactive chat that we are usually in on fight nights. One of the best ways to watch a fight. You can ask Chris questions. You can ask me questions. Lance Pugmire is in there. Some ex-fighters are in there. It's a great time. PPV.com is our proud presenting sponsor for the last few years, this year and beyond. We have some big news coming with PPV.com, a fight announcement, all that great stuff. So PPV.com is the place. We follow them on socials. Follow them on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter. They do a good job creating their own content. And then when we come together and we join forces on fight weeks, it's like the Avengers, bro. It's some of the best boxing content you can get. Mr. Chris Algieri, how are you?
Like the Avengers. This guy's talking in modern Marvel speak. I like that. You've been on Twitter, apparently.
I'm always on Twitter, bro. Firing off.
I know.
Firing off my takes, fighting people, getting retweeted, getting subtweeted, getting rage baited. I do some rage baiting.
You do.
It's a great experience, man. Mm-hmm. You know, fighting with, not fighting, I would say, you know, talking about this whole Shakur getting stripped by the WBC because that set off some ramifications. Yeah. So I do want to talk about that. I do want to do something fun on this episode. We're going to do a little experiment. We found the top eight contenders from ranging from 135 to 147 on if we think they could beat Shakur Stevenson, and we're going to rank them on least likely or worst chance to best chance. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I like your idea here.
It's hard to explain.
Talk about rage bait, because when you first sent it to me, I'm like, this doesn't make sense the way you're wording it. But I got it now. I understand it's a thought experiment again. But sure, I'm sure the clips will piss people off.
That'll be
fun.
Oh yeah, people love the clip. 30 seconds. I can find a way to piss 80% of boxing fans off in 30 seconds. Or leave you wanting more. That's the purpose of the social media clips, is to leave you wanting more, to click on the link and watch
engagement
the full discussion.
Engagement is the word, Dan. Engagement. That's the
engagement.
Word. So it's all about.
You know? And I wanted to start the pod with that experiment. That was the plan. And so I saw yesterday the WBC has stripped Shakur Stevenson of his lightweight title. The WBC wanted a $100,000 sanctioning fee, even though the WBC was not on the line. In the Teofimo fight, apparently this is their process. This is one of their provisions. Does it make it okay? You know, Shakur fought his WBC mandatory in Zepeda just 7 months ago and paid the sanctioning fee there. WBC's argument is you can move up and fight for other titles while holding our belt if you pay the $100,000. If you don't pay the $100,000, you get stripped. So I don't want to use the E word, but that sounds like the E word to me. I don't want to get sued. WBC usually gives a fighter 2 to 3 weeks to come up with a decision for Shakur. Does he want to stay at 135? Does he want to stay at 140? No, they gave it 48 hours. Is there something political behind this? You know, Shakur is very close to Terrence Crawford. Terrence Crawford famously got stripped by the WBC a couple months ago. Said, I don't need your sanction fees. I don't need your belts. I didn't want to talk about this, but here it is, Chris. WBC up to their shenanigans.
Political or spiteful? That's really the question, because of the characters involved, the individuals, the identities involved. Listen, the whole paying a holding fee for a belt is disgusting. Let's be honest. A guy fought 6 months ago. If it's beyond a year, actually, even if you fight for a title in another weight class, you should have a grace period of when you decide whether you're going to come back and defend. And if you don't, in writing, say, I'm not going back down to 135. I do not need to. I will not be defending your belt. Every right to strip me to go ahead and do it, which would be respectful to the champion, which is the way that a governing body should be. Governing bodies should respect their champions, just like everyone should. We should all respect the champions. And it just seems like the way these guys operate, they're trying to pretend that they're bigger than the fighters, and they're not. You're not bigger. You're not bigger than Shakur Stevenson. I know a lot of them think that way, but that's not the case because without the fighters, there are no titles, there are no governing bodies, there are none of this. So the fighters come first. So you should respect the champion to make the decision on whether or not they're going to return to the weight class and defend it. And if it's sub a year, because they let guys go for years without fighting, depending on the guy. And there's no sanction fees, there's no demand, there's no stripping. It's just, if it was across the board, it would be less heinous. But the fact that it's picking and choosing based on whatever, whether it's politics or spite or history or whatever, or just what you can do for me, makes it obviously gross. And again, it's a shame. I really think that more people in the sport need to respect the champions and their decisions and treat them like what they are. And this was not cool the way that it was approached with Shakur.
Not cool at all. And I think we're at a tipping point because I use Twitter to gauge where the fans are at. I understand not everyone is on it, but the WBC has been moving crazy as of late, and they're at a tipping point. Mauricio Suleiman went on the Errol Hawani show and regurgitated some of the points that he was making over the last couple of years. I was mistreated at Canelo Crawford. They didn't let me in the ring. They didn't give me a hotel suite. They didn't give me 10 tickets for my family. Dude, no one, if you're mistreated or not, no one's going to side with you there. They're not going to be on your side in that. They're not going to have a pity party for you. They just don't, like you said something during what you just said there, they don't apply the same rules to everyone. That's what makes this shit crazy. When they appoint Conor Benn as the number one contender for the WBC, when he's had maybe one fight there and he hasn't fought there in years, that's a problem. When Ryan Garcia gets a title shot coming off of a loss and a drug suspension, that's a problem. When Manny Pacquiao gets a title shot, jumps the whole line, that's a problem. Like, these are problems that they are bringing on themselves. So when you see this,
also don't forget when they exonerate guys who fail drug tests without getting any kind of governing organization that actually does drug testing to say the same thing. It's they just decide within 2 days because they want a fight to happen. That's also pretty obvious what's going on there.
Not to mention the whole Canelo thing. How long was Benavidez Canelo's mandatory? And they made interim belts. They did not mandate that fight, but then they go and mandate other fights, or they strip fighters within minutes. You know, listen, Shakur just fought for his mandatory WBC. He fulfilled the obligation when he fought Zepeda 7 months ago, not a year ago, months ago. And the WBC says, all right, so you're going to go up to 140, fight for the WBO, fight for the ring. You still got to pay us $100,000. And you have people telling me that, like, that's the rules, Dan. That's the provision. Why, you follow boxing, you don't know that? You know the rule. It's a gross rule. It's a gross rule because it's not like he's been holding the belt hostage. Like, we've seen guys do that for numerous times. Where they're
inactive. Is it a percentage or it's just a flat 100 grand?
I don't know how it worked, but it was 100 grand.
Where does this number come from? Is this an arbitrary number? Is there a percentage? So I got to pay the sanctioning fee for the belt I'm actually fighting for, and I got to pay a sanctioning fee to a belt that I'm not defending just to hold it.
Just to hold it.
Yeah, well, that's them looking at it and they're going like, oh, whoa, you're making money without us making money. No. The perception of power annoys me. That you think that you're bigger than the champions, but you know Shakur Stevenson is the guy. He shouldn't have to pay to hold on to a belt that he's not defending or fighting for. So if anything, you're getting free publicity because he's your WBC champion fighting in a new weight class and doing great things.
Well, here's the thing with that is if you go back and look, someone pointed this out to me. He was not holding the WBC belt during the week. Why? We can draw our conclusions. Is it because it wasn't on the line? Is it because he wasn't fighting at 135? Or was it because Bud Crawford and that powers that be over there
said... Or is it because they asked for $100,000 and I said no?
Well, that didn't come yet. He had to know that was coming. Or was it because the powers that be, you got to connect the dots here. You know, with Crawford, that was a coordinated thing that Crawford did when he gave up the belts. And when Zuffa went on there... public tour talking about how we're going to get rid of the belts. It all that was like beginning of December, remember? December to remember. So, but with Shakur, did he not do that for a reason? Was he not wearing that WBC belt for a reason? And Mauricio, who we've seen is very sensitive and gets very emotional with his decisions, why is he not wearing the WBC? Why is he not carrying it around this week? All right. Crawford already threw the belts away and made a whole thing because he's part of the Zuffa belts don't matter. Shakur is with Crawford. You know, he can be easily influenced there or just doesn't want to pay the 100K either too. So there's a lot of ways to look at it there. Like I lean towards the latter. Like I don't think it was a mistake that he didn't have the WBC belt up on the stage. I think that it's a coordinated thing here. But it's out of control, man. I mean, Shakur put out a statement here. 100K to some crooks who don't deserve it? Nah. My daughter, I'd rather give it to her. The WBC didn't even have shit to do with this fight, and it's eating them alive knowing your belt don't make me. Which is a good point. Like, I think the fighters make the belts.
Yeah, so I've been saying this entire point today. And to the point about you're making about Crawford, you know, is this a shot across the bow because of what Crawford did? I don't know. That I think that's speculation.
Well, they're even talking about it, too.
Okay, but I'm talking about from the point of view of Shakur Stevenson. They didn't drop it on him that he had to pay 100K, you know, the day of the fight. Like, that was in discussion. Like, oh, if you're going to fight, you know, you got to pay us. And, like, in that case, cool, then I don't need to bring your belt around. This is going to hurt you more than me, buddy. I'm not paying you because you make some arbitrary rule I've never even heard before. Not doing that. But also now you're not going to get the recognition of me carrying around your belt. Like, you want me to pay this thing? I'm not paying the thing. And also I'm not just going to pretend to carry around the belt, which helps you. The mindset needs to switch. The mindset is that the belt is bigger than the fighter. And that's not the case. You know, belts are important. I go to bat for the governing bodies all the time because I think belts are very, very important. We've done a whole show on that. But the belt is not bigger than the man. And that needs to be established. And I think that more and more fighters, and we've seen this over the years, you know, Bud did. But Bud was on the way out the door. Shakur is a current guy.
That's so just why this is different, dude.
This is very different.
Way different here because he's 28 years old, about to enter the biggest fights of his career. And this isn't maybe an Usyk bin in the belts that we thought might happen, or there's a rumor of that if he signs with Zuffa. This isn't Crawford doing it on his way out the door. This is in his prime Shakur Stevenson, who's is a top 3 or 4 star of the sport. So that's something to keep an eye on here. Crawford also commented, they mad. It's cool when they do it. It's a problem when I do it. F them. No, that's the wrong one. that was talking about Teofimo. Crawford basically said they're mad at me, so they're taking it out on Shakur, which is a whole nother theory here. But I'm you know, when you look at the WBC's moves in the last couple of months, this isn't like years. We're talking about the last couple of months. They stripped Crawford over the fees. They complained that they were mistreated during the Canelo Crawford fight. They ranked Conor Bedd number one at 147. They award Ryan Garcia a title shot coming off of a loss. They had that ridiculous ruling with Oshaki Foster and Fulton. When Fulton missed the weight, then they all of a sudden just moved it up to 135 and made it a interim fight. Are there other things that I'm missing here? Because it's hard to keep track. Those things that I just listed are why people are going to root for Zuffa and why Zuffa is going to succeed. Because they're going to look at this and all the craziness that the WBC is doing and say, we're going to be different. You know, we're going to have one ranking organization. We're going to not have sanctioning fees. We're going to take a lot more of the pot from you, but we're not going to have sanctioning fees. We're going to have one champion. We're going to have a top 10 where where 10 fights 9, 8 fights 7, and so forth. 1 versus 2, best versus best, no sanctioning fees. But all these mistakes and all these emotional decisions that the WBC makes and some of these other organizations have paved the way for why someone like Zuffa is going to kick down the door and make some changes. Not perfect, but they're going to make some changes.
It's fuel to the fire for sure. It's ammunition for Zuffa. Is it going to be enough? That's yet to be seen. But it is interesting how WBC is moving lately. You've got this looming organization that's coming to push you out, and you're making yourself louder than ever, and not in a good way. It's not a really good move. It's interesting. You know, this is the most we've heard from WBC in years, and it's at the worst time. because it's not positive. It's not positive stuff. The people have spoken. People are speaking. You know, you see the way that people you see the way that people respond on Twitter to these kinds of movements. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me coming from someone who's looking at it from the WBC's perspective. But also, it's coming from what I said before. It's the egos and thinking that they're bigger than everybody and bigger than every fighter and bigger than everything. Fighters don't get 10 tickets to fights, but the governing body needs 10 tickets.
Dude, that's what I mean.
The main event doesn't get 10 tickets. I didn't
have a suite, he said. He literally expected, this is how delusional he is, Mauricio Sulaiman. He literally thought that people were going to like take his side and be like passionate and be remorseful for him, like have pity for him.
So used to that.
Right.
It's a slap in the face to not get it.
Right.
When you're a boxing elite and you've been in the elite circles for so long, but have a little self-awareness to understand the time that you're in. You're in a really dangerous spot. You have opposition directly aimed at you. Now is a little time to have self-awareness and at least play the part for the public eye. Don't go on one of the biggest shows in the world and start throwing pity parties as a victim because you're not getting the first class suite.
So obviously we've been very vocal about Zuffa. We don't think it's perfect. But I also don't think, and we don't think Zuffa is perfect. And I also can acknowledge that the sanctioning bodies are not perfect either. So it's like choosing a lesser of two evils. Like the sanctioning bodies and the old guard have all their problems. Like we've seen, they're supposed to not act as promoters and ranking systems. But we know that promoters work closely with certain sanctioning bodies. Like why does Top Rank have so many WBO champions? When you look at the rankings across the board, why are they all different? Why is there a guy ranked at number 3 in the WBC and he's not even in the top 10 with the IBF? Use your brain there. It's a very, very strange thing. So we obviously, this old guard has its own issues, but the belts, we do agree that the belts do matter. Then you have Zuffa on the other hand, that there's a lot of things about Zuffa that we don't like and we don't want to see them take over, but I don't know how to feel as a fan. I don't know how to feel as where this sport is going, because obviously something needs to change. Like we can't have what WBC is doing. I mean, and I don't want to see fighters get exploited like the Zuffa side. I don't want to see boxing turn into UFC, which I think Zuffa is obviously trying to do.
Consolidating of power is really dangerous. And this goes down to just basic politics and basic socioeconomic stuff and just rule in general. If you put all the power in one place, the old saying is power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. So if you put it all in one place, you don't have the competitive governing bodies against each other and you got these different rankings and it's just one whole organization. It basically comes down to one person or a very small level of elites who are deciding who does what. Corruption is just way too easy, and it's way too much control to be centralized in a way. And that's one of the reasons why boxing is the way it is. I mean, we have all of our faults for why about the governing bodies, and we've talked about many of them. But we've also talked quite positively about what the belts mean and what they are for the sport and how important they are. But also, I think part of the ecosystem of boxing that makes it work is that there's competitive neck-to-neck, head-to-head, neck-to-neck attacks, and that keeps everybody kind of honest. If you go across the board, it sounds good on paper. There's a lot of political ideologies that sound really good on paper, but in execution, don't work.
And so what do you think sounds good, though? What part do you think sounds good on paper?
One organization that has everything all set up in one. But yeah, all right, I'm gonna say, so does communism. Communism sounds good, but in practice, it doesn't work. So, and I'm sure we're going to get a bunch of comments on that one. But that's what I mean by political ideologies in terms of, in a perfect world, this makes sense. But in execution, human beings have too much of an effect. There's too much of a human thumb on the scale to make this be fair and safe to the fighters.
Okay, but I will say this, like the ring rankings are pretty good. Like for the most part, you look at a top 10 in the ring and you're like, all right, these are the top 10 guys in the weight class. You look at a top 10 in the IBF, this guy you never heard of, ranked as high as like 2, 3, 4. So
Dan, you ever been to a ranking meeting at a convention?
No, thank God, but I've watched
it's political lobbying.
Yeah,
it's political lobbying. It's stand up and go, my guy deserves to be here, this and this and this.
Right.
And then, oh, but they had dinner the night before, or they're going to have dinner again,
it's
or they
not
made a
perfect
donation. No, of course it's not. Neither is politics. Politics is not perfect.
Okay, but what, if they use those ring rankings, even anything could be compromised. I mean, for the we have to see how that all plays out because we have to understand that the ring is owned by Turkey. Like this isn't some independent.
Wasn't always,
but now it is. And Turkey owns the ring. Turkey owns the zone. Turkey owns is part of Zufa. That's a problem. Big time problem.
About consolidation of power. When you have it all in one place, it becomes very, very
dangerous. Okay, but for the most part, their rankings are good.
And they always have been. And because I think a lot of the rankings come from a bunch
There's of... a committee.
A bunch of their committee, yeah, committee and writers. And again, they're not being lobbied. Like the conventions are public. You literally are in a huge room, an auditorium, and you stand up and go, my guy deserves to be number three. Who the hell is your guy from Zaire? I don't know. I never even heard of this guy. Well, he deserves to be it. And then also, you know, however way we can get this to work, and we're going to find a way to work. That's how lobbying works. It's not a perfect system. It's actually a bad system. But in terms of like the Ring Magazine, they have a committee that's in a closed room. They discuss it. They figure it out. I don't know how they do it in terms of voting and the most amount of votes gets to this, but it's usually pretty good. But really, when you talk to most boxing people who are insiders, if you brought us all together, we're going to come up with the same 10 guys for everybody's top 10. It's really not that hard. The talent pool is not that big. So top 10 is a big deal. You're going to have the 10 guys. It may not be exactly 1 through 10, but you're going to have the top 10 guys almost in everyone you talk to who knows anything about boxing. Lost you. I got nothing.
That's the rub. We good?
Yep.
Yeah, I had my mic turned up to cough. That's the rub here is that Zuffa is going to probably do what the UFC does. They have one organization. They have one committee making the rankings. And what I hear from UFC fans is they have no idea how those are put together. Dana doesn't even know. Dana was on trial yesterday, under oath yesterday, and he was pretty much says, I don't have anything to do with rankings. I have nothing to do with pretty much running the organization. Hunter Campbell does all of that. So it might just be one guy over at the UFC, and they disguise it as a ranking system. I don't know there. But if Zuffa is going to take over and they're going to be using the Zuffa belt and the ring belt, and they're going to be doing, and they want to be the ranking system and the promoter, because that's what they want to do. That's what Zuffa's looking to do. That's when we're going to have to judge them. And when you see someone like WBC doing this, stripping the biggest fighter, top five biggest fighters in the world coming off of a huge fight, you're going to say, you know what? Forget this. Let's try something new. Let's try something different. In comes Zuffa. And they're shiny and they're bright and they're buying fights. They have Paramount deal. But they also are looking to exploit fighters. So what are we choosing here? What are we rooting for here? Do we just sit back and let it all happen and just be like, I want to watch the fights because that's how I have a lot of fans feel? Or do we follow every little part of it like we do too? Do want to talk about the ring belt too because I'm seeing
real
this.
Quick though, when talking about the UFC and these kind of rankings, you know how many athletes are signed to the UFC at any one time?
A lot.
No, not really. Between 600 and 700. That's not
that
much.
You don't think that's a lot?
No. For ranking, no. It's not that much. The talent pool is so small. Boxing is gigantic. But again, the Zuffa boxing is going to be a very small group, you know, cadre of fighters. It's going to be a few hundred fighters. It's going to be bigger because there's more weight classes, or maybe not. But yeah, it's a lot easier to rank, you know, 600 guys than it is to rank 6,000 or 16,000 or 36,000. There's a lot more boxers in the world than MMA guys and a lot than MMA fighters. And there's a lot more top level boxers, guys that deserve top 10 rankings. It's a much harder thing to do than the talent pool is way bigger. The scope is completely different.
Yeah, but they use the same. It's the same type of system, though. There's guys fighting around the world that should not be in the top 10 in boxing.
And there's guys that should be that you'll never hear of if you don't have access, which is part of the issue.
Okay, what do you think about the ring belt? Because obviously it's coming into more focus now because Crawford's like, I got the ring belt, doesn't matter.
But
Shakur's talking about the ring belt.
Yeah, but again, Bud's not in the system anymore. Bud, first of all, has been above the system for a while now. He's also left the sport in terms of, he's not competing anymore. He's retired.
Oh, I get that. I mean, they're talking up the ring belt. The ring belt has gained so much more significance in the last 18 months. We can all agree there. It's coming into focus even more because we're seeing them push out the WBCs, the IBFs, the WBOs, and they're pushing in the ring belt. Hey, look, this is the ring belt. It's always been done right. It's always been 1 versus 2. Rocky had it. Look how cool it is. But if you peel it back, you know, it's not perfect either. The ring belt is not perfect either. You can't sanction fights through it. Their champions do not have to fight mandatories. There's no title eliminators. That's at the mercy of the ranking committee, who's fighting one versus two. Look at 147 pounds, for instance. There's the Ring Magazine. There's no champion there. It's vacant. Devin Haney is the number one. Norman is the number two. So if Haney wanted to win the welterweight ring title, he'd have to beat Brian Norman again.
And that's silly. And that's the thing. Like when you're making up rules as you go, and you make arbitrary rules, and it's and who's making this rule, which can change hands because it can be sold. The company can be sold, and then there's a new system. You know, and you can just do whatever you want. That's the problem with the ring belt. The ring belt is like, it's like the people's champion belt kind of thing. Like, oh, you know, the ring belt, you're saying it's only been a big deal now, or like it's really getting a lot. I don't agree. The ring belt was a big deal when I was growing up.
But you know what I mean? But now more than ever, it's coming into real focus now. Like they're looking at that as being the only belt.
But there wasn't as many fans looking, you know, there were, especially a lot of casuals. And there also wasn't social media. Ring belt was a big deal when I was coming up and I had my boxing magazines. The ring belt mattered. It was important. It was something that fighters wanted. But it's
can you agree that now it's going to be, they're going to try to use it as maybe the only one with their ideology?
It's the transition from this. You don't notice this, Dan? This is the transition from the governing bodies to the Zuffa belt. That's all it is.
Yes, of course.
It's a bridge. Yeah, that's why it's getting pushed like this. Because you're taking away the organizations. You're making a arbitrary belt become an important belt, and then you're making a new belt that's going to just transfer the power of the ring belt onto the Zuffa belt.
But if you say you hold, it's usually one versus two, right? So what's to say that a guy like, say, like Teofimo doesn't fight the second ranked guy? If he holds the 140 ring belt and he can fight, or like Opataya has the cruiserweight ring belt and he's fighting guys out of the top 10. He fought Breedis, and the rest is a bunch of guys out of the top 10 in the last 2 years. Who's like the thing about the WBC and some of these sanctioning bodies is they'll usually mandate someone to fight. A lot of times the mandatories suck. You know, sometimes they're good. I would say for the most part they're better than not. Then you have a little more meritocracy, a little bit of meritocracy. The thing is that the Ring Magazine can't mandate a fight. They can't sanction a fight. They can't say you have to fight this guy.
There's no teeth. But that's part of the. This is another tactic that promoters have been doing for years. The Muhammad Ali Act originally really had no teeth. It was written by promoters and lawyers. They wanted it to be toothless. They wanted it to look good. This is why I said that the Muhammad Ali Act needs to be changed, added to, not taken away from, or changed completely. But also the people who are writing it are the promoters who want to use it to take control of fighters and are being in control of the situation that can coerce fighters and be in control in a way that is undue. And it's going to same thing with these belts, because at the end of the day, what you're talking about is like, oh man, well, if this guy can do that and do that, it's going to be a company man. Whoever's the company man is going to be the ring belt holder or said belt holder, instead of the guy who fought up the rankings to get there.
Oh man, that'd be a problem.
Or you're going to have guys who deserve it. You're going to have the Shakur Stevenses of the world that the governing body or the company doesn't like, and they're not going to get the same practice. And that's the problem. There is no standard. It's a two-tiered system for the law, and there's no standard, and also there's no teeth. So again, it comes down to the when you solidify the power, and it comes down to one person or a small group of people or a committee of people that are behind closed doors and no idea where this guy comes from, and you just get this arbitrary decision. Boom, that's the ring champion. That's the guy.
For the most part, it's one versus two, and then you hold on to it. And like that part I like about it, but
yeah, that's good.
Yeah, but who are they to? Yeah, that's what, if the rankings get compromised, and they're no different than some of the cockamamie.
But the problem is, so when five beats one, and then five becomes one, right? And then five becomes one, and then one becomes two. You already hold a win over two. You have to fight them again in order to be the ring champion. That's what I mean. Silly.
If they're going to depend on this to be the title, they're going to have to change a lot of its ways and change the rulings, which changes what the belt means and changes the allure of it.
The changes.
And it's owned by a freaking government. It's owned by Turkey. You don't think that's going to play a role in it?
100%. And that's the problem with the ring belt, because it can be owned by a promoter. And that's why the Muhammad Ali Act originally was supposed to be the way we were ranking belt systems and promoters and managers not supposed to be the same people, because there's just way too much undue influence. And it's funny that we say we're moving towards the UFC. I think we're moving towards the WWE because there's so much control that who gets decided to be whatever.
Well, yeah, we're still the UFC is now moving towards. You know, Patty Pimblett versus Justin Gaethje was not the fight. I mean, it was a great fight in terms of what Paramount Plus wanted in their debut weekend, but that wasn't the top two guys at lightweight.
No,
am I wrong
also,
there?
The good part about that is that they didn't get the script, and the guy who was supposed to win didn't.
But there was an interim title on the line, and now Justin Gaethje is the interim champion. When that Armin guy, and you have Topuria. I'm not a UFC guy by any means. I'm very casual, but everything I've read about the UFC is that they're drifting away from the best versus best, and we make.
But
the
also,
best
they're coming under big time scrutiny for fixed fights, which is again another thing moving towards the WWE model of. And I'm not saying WWE is doing anything illegal. It's
so fixed
it's,
fights.
It's
was that
entertainment?
Like
well, yeah, because you get some insider trading. It's not so much exactly that it's fixed, but there are some of that going on too. But you got a guy who's like, hey, listen, my camp wasn't very good. My knee is killing me. You know, just letting you know.
Yeah, that did happen. They had a rough UFC, had a crazy first week between that, the guy fainting and at the weigh-in.
Yeah, doing a face plant.
Gaethje had that crazy thing on his neck, and Gaethje talking about fighter pay and, oh, apparently I was offered more money, but my manager didn't answer. Didn't respond. They had a crazy fight week. But looking at the lightweight title picture now, this isn't going to happen overnight. We're not going to see Zuffa's ring take over. There's still all four sanctioning bodies. And right now at lightweight, we have two vacancies. WBC is vacant. WBA is vacant because Tank is the champion in recess. So IBF is Raymond Murataya. WBO is Abdullah Mason. You have Floyd Schofield looming, Lucas Body, Lamont Roach. And Herrera. So this lightweight division is constantly changing. Guys are leaving the weight class. Guys are getting arrested. And we have sanctioning bodies deciding the fates of fighters. That's another part of this, too. It's like, obviously, Shakur didn't pay the $100K, but there was still a possibility that Shakur was going to go back down to 135, fight Murataya for lineal ring and IBF and WBC. But that decision's gone now because of a money figure. So that part kind of stinks. Like I don't think Shakur is going to go down to 135.
And that was a poor move. That's a poor move on WBC's point because they're shooting themselves in the foot there. Because Shakur comes down, and he fights Murataya. That's a big money fight.
Yeah.
So now Murataya fights who he's going to fight to and then takes his belt. It's a much smaller percentage of the pie. So that's that looks like a smash and grab, short money, not licking long kind of maneuver.
But emotional also play.
It looks also like. I looked at it like WBC saw the writing on the wall. Shakur is not coming back down here to defend it. Let's strip this guy.
Yeah.
That belt was going to get stripped no matter what.
So let's strip him before he vacates. Let's get in front of this. Let's paint the narrative.
Yeah, but that's not a good narrative.
That's the point. We've talked about how delusional they are.
Yeah, the self-awareness is the issue there because that could have ended in a positive way. And that's what I mean about respecting champions and giving them grace period to decide, you know what? I'm not coming down to defend your belt. Thank you for the opportunity that I've had.
Right.
That would have been the way to handle it. Yeah.
It just doesn't look good. The guy just fought for your belt. He followed the rules 7 months ago. He paid the $100K 7 months ago.
Or whatever that fee was. You don't know if it was $100K.
I think he said 100 in his tweet. I already paid the 100. Now they want another 100 for a fight they're not even part of. It's a rule, Dan. Pay your bills. Like people will tweet
that. That must be an agreed upon.
Apparently, it's always been a WBC thing.
What? That if you fight for the belt and you maintain it somewhere else?
If you move up and fight for a different organization, you have to pay $100,000 to keep the belt.
That's wild. Hey, quick story on my part. So I was WBO world champion at super lightweight, 140 pounds, right? Moved up to fight Manny Pacquiao, which was also the WBO. Originally was told that I was not going to be stripped. Week before the fight, I get... an official letter saying that I will be stripped immediately upon stepping in the ring with Manny Pacquiao.
Is this before they added that new clause that I actually like, where the WBO allows you to move up and fight for the immediately for the higher weight class?
So that's been around for a while. That was Amanda Serrano was, they were utilizing that a lot for her, so she could jump up all these weight classes and go right into title fights. My fight was before they were made that an official thing. But I'm not even sure why I was able to fight for that, just because Bob Arum said so. But essentially, and Pacquiao needed a defense, and he was fighting an undefeated world champion from another weight class.
Like, we like this white guy from Stony Brook.
Well, no, because he beat the guy we were supposed to have him fight. Yeah, he beat Ruslan. So they needed someone to do it, and meritocracy actually came through. But yeah, I was originally told I was going to be able to protect my belt because I wanted to go beat Manny and then move back down to 40. I never wanted to fight a 40 set ever.
No, if you beat Manny, you were going right for Mayweather.
Well, yeah, of course. But no, I was actually going to have to fight Manny again and then have to fight Mayweather. So eventually, I would have had to have relinquished my belt anyway. But
like,
yeah,
right to your point right there, it's just like these rules, like these rules, there's nothing consistent.
So inconsistent. It depends on who you are. And I forgot who it was, like right after, maybe it was Marquez. Marquez got to jump up and kept his title and then fought for a new title as world champion in two weight classes. I'm looking around like, I mean, I understand I'm not Marquez. Like Marquez can do it, but I'm like, can we have some kind of consistency in the rulings here? No, of course not.
No, none at all. These aren't things we like talking about, but it's like we're in an affliction point in the sport and we're seeing it all play out right in front of our eyes. We're seeing the changing of the structure of the sport, which is going to dictate the next 100 years, play out right in front of our eyes. Like, fighters are giving up belts. They're dumping belts. Sanctioning bodies are making ridiculous things. Another thing, too, that just came to my mind. So David Benavidez is fighting Zerto Ramirez for his cruiserweight title. Now, Zerto has the WBO and the WBA. David Benavidez is the WBC champion at 175. So when he goes up, does he have to pay that $100K too? Is he fine paying that? Because as we've seen, some fighters are fine with the sanctioning fees because they have no choice. Oshaki Foster told me, I don't mind paying it. I was told where it goes. I love this belt. It changed my life. That's fine. You're Oshaki Foster. You're not in the same, you know, tax bracket as Shakur or Crawford. I want to see how they treat the Benavidez because Benavidez loves his WBC title. So they should make that clear. Is Mauricio Sulaimán afterwards going to say, I have received my $100,000 from David Benavidez, allowing him to go fight for the WBO cruiserweight title against Zerto Ramirez? You're speechless, Chris. You're speechless.
No, because I'm thinking, because he might go out and say that, to, you know, which would be a good, you know, public persona, save face, but is he actually going to charge him? That's the real question.
Right. That's another thing to where these funds go.
If Benavidez pushes back, what happens? If he goes, you know what? I'm not coming back down. But, you know,
In a way, he needs that belt too, because he wants to go back down to 175. You know, if he's going to stay at cruiserweight, then, you know what I mean? That's like the double standard of it all. Like, because they're either going to strip him.
About Shakur earlier, because obviously, I think the writing was on the wall. He's obviously not coming down. So we strip him. I think ultimately this is what was going to happen anyway. It just didn't have to have all this bad press.
Right. Usually they have more time. Like, you know, like
there should be a grace period. There should be a
way longer grace period than 48 hours. Come on, especially after you defended the title and followed all the rules 7 months ago. All right, enough with that. Let's get into the fun stuff here. So we've come up with this thought process here, a little experiment.
Thought experiment.
We're going to give you, Chris found 8 fighters ranging from 135 to 147. These are the 8 fighters he thinks have the best chance to defeat Shakur Stevenson. Not saying that he thinks they could. I believe Shakur's the favorite over all of them. I don't know where you stand on that. And we rank them from best to least.
Likely.
That's right. The terminology
most,
that I'm struggling
likely
with.
To least likely able to secure a victory over Shakur. Meanwhile, making the top 8 is a big deal because it was very hard for one. So when Dan first texted me about this, he's like, "Hey, I'm thinking about doing this idea." He's giving me the 8 guys that could beat Shakur Stevenson. I'm like, there's not 8 guys in the world that could beat Shakur Stevenson. So my first question was, are we talking all time or right now? Because that's my thought process is there's not 8 guys who can beat him. So are we thinking all time in the history of the world?
I'm not a voice note guy. I was about to send a voice note and really explain the nitty gritty of it, but I gave you my list as
an example. I knew where you were coming with it.
Yeah. Because there is really no one out there, I think, right now that can beat him. But we are human. And he could have a bad night. There are styles that could frustrate Shakur Stevenson. There are styles that could beat Shakur Stevenson. And I kept 135 in there. This is before the stripping of the belt. Because, you know, he is a lightweight. He fought there just recently. 140 is where he's at now. I don't know if you can stay
guys
there.
Can move up, too. 35 pounds can move up.
And he's also talked about fighting at 147, albeit with rehydration clauses, which I don't really like. But Shakur's world, we're living in it. All right, start with number eight. Who do you have at number eight?
Lamont Roach. I think that he is a very good boxer puncher and has shown himself to be very capable at the highest of levels. You know, the Gervonta Davis fight, there's been so much talk about Gervonta and Shakur over the years, and we essentially all watched Lamont beat Gervonta that night, came out with a, albeit that he got a draw. Very, very capable, showed himself that he can deal with a lot of different things and issues. He broke his hand in the Cruz fight, which is a very difficult guy to deal with one hand, and he actually got better after the hand break. Yeah, Lamont's one of those guys. He can do a lot of really good things. And I think just stylistically, a quick-handed, durable position fighter like Lamont Roach is someone that could tangle with a guy like Shakur, who's, you know, such a sublime boxer.
He can make it rough. He could box. He can mix it up. He can do both. Problem, he's 5'7".
Yeah,
he's 5'7" with a 68-inch reach. And I have all the reaches of all these fighters because I think that's such a very important part of the equation here, and I'm beating Shakur. He's also been talking with Shakur about making this fight. Shakur is open to making it. Mm-hmm. Seems like something they agreed upon, or at least verbally. But that's a good choice. And you like that at 135 or 140?
40. I don't think we see Shakur at 35 anymore.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But for the thought experiment here, I added 135. All right, number seven.
Alberto Pueyo, the Dominican. Mm. Very tall, very awkward. I didn't think much of him until he fought Gary Antoine Russell, and he showed how disruptive he could be. Did the same thing with Matias. Very, very close fight. A lot of people thought that Pueyo won that fight. Pueyo could easily be undefeated right now because that is his only loss. It was a split decision to Matias, who's a brutal puncher, but it really shut him off. So, but more than anything, I don't know. I think the trickiness and the height gives him a shot to make it interesting to a degree. And, you know, I think of the Nakatila fight, which was not a good fight, you know, but Shakur was kind of tentative that night because he had a tall, long guy who could punch a little bit. I think Pueyo is a lot better than Nakatila, but you saw how the height could be an issue for him. And Pueyo is not slow, you know, so he beat it in that case. It's really just the fact that he looks like a praying mantis and, you know, has that height and reach that can be difficult to deal with for Shakur, who's a shorter guy.
5'9.5", 71-inch reach, according to Boxer Rec, has wins over Martin.
He's bigger than that.
He is. He's got wind over Sander Martin, Gary Antoine Russell. We just brought up the Matias split decision. All right, number six.
Richardson Hitchens. And ooh, if they didn't spar so much, I probably would have had Hitchens higher. But they spent a lot of time in the ring together. And Hitchens, another guy, tall, long, big for 140, great jab. I don't think he has enough physicality to deal with Shakur, because I think even we saw that in the Teofimo fight, Shakur is a lot physically stronger than people give him credit for. So I think at the end of the day, Shakur's ability to fight at different ranges, whereas Hitchens is really a long-range guy, is the difference. But I know so much about Hitchens and the fact that they know so much about each other, I put Hitchens in down here. So he could easily be higher in the list.
5'10", 74-inch reach, yes, on Hitchens. Yes. Has and a great
he's
jab.
Big. He's big for 40.
Has a piston-like jab. But the problem with him is he just doesn't throw the right enough.
Yeah.
He doesn't throw those power shots off. You need a hybrid. You need to be able to outbox Shakur at times, and you're also going to have to rough him up. I do think he could go jab for jab with him and fight on the outside all day with Shakur. But are you going to be precise enough to win seven rounds?
You need a varied offense. You need a varied offense.
That's what I mean. That's why I have him down there too. What do you got? We're at number five.
Speaking of varied offense and dynamic, Abdullah Mason. I think him. And if he was older and more mature, I would have him even higher, because I think stylistically the things that he does are the things that could give Shakur issues. I just don't think he has it yet. And I think that fighting at the highest level, you need to have that experience. Shakur has more experience than any of these guys fighting in tip top big fights at a very, very high level. I just don't think Mason has that experience yet, and that would be really the difference. But in terms of dynamic offense, he's got it. He's definitely got to work on his defense. A little too porous. He gets hit a little too much, like we saw in the Noakes fight. But yeah, this is the kind of fight that I think a mature Abdullah Mason is a high IQ firefight.
He's interesting because you could put him number one. You could put him number two. But he slides because of the inexperience. He slides because of some of the defensive deficiencies.
Age,
right. Inexperience, age, deficiencies on defense. 74-inch reach for young Abdullah. Same reach as Hitchens, at least according to BoxRec. But, yeah, he's someone that I had at number four. So we were off by just one. What's your number four?
Muay Thai. I flip-flopped them. I was going back and forth on Muay Thai and Abdullah Mason. And the maturity was what got me over. And the fact that he looked so good against Andy Cruz. And Andy Cruz is such a high IQ guy. I didn't expect him. I thought he was going to he did use his physicality perfectly. But he also showed really technical class in that fight and was able to outwork and out-hustle and outsmart Andy Cruz in that fight. You know, if it wasn't for that, I would have had him behind Roach. I would have had him in the last place, honestly. But he looked so good against Andy Cruz, and that's a very difficult style to look good against. And he showed his ring intelligence. That fight would be at 140. So I got him high on the list.
So you have that at 140, then not 135?
No, I don't think Muay Thai is long for 35.
Well, I think a lot of 135.
I think it would be a much easier fight for Shakur. I think at 40, Muay Thai is even stronger.
Well, there's two ways to look at it now. So Shakur's out of the division. So Muay Thai can be like, I might be able to get undisputed if I stick around and beat an Abdullah Mason, fight for a vacant title. Or I can go to 140 now and chase Shakur there and join the ranks. I can have an excuse. Not an excuse, but a little more motivation to go up to 140, a little more inspiration if that's where all the fights are going to be. Because now Shakur's the guy now. Everyone has to realize that. Shakur is the guy. People are going to be lining up to fight him to figure out if they can beat him. Like this experiment that we're doing right here is what we did with Floyd Mayweather years ago. Like which style, who can do it? You might not like Shakur, but listen, this is what it is at this point. And that's the interesting part of that T.O. Shakur fight is what we said in the lead up to it. Chris was like, I want to see what happens if Shakur wins. Like where does he get catapulted to in the boxing world? And it's very clear that now we are doing thought experiments. There's people coming up with their best ideas on who can beat him. That's fun to me. That's what makes boxing fun is when you have one guy that's so good and we're trying to find different ways to beat him.
This is the Shakur era. It has started. The era has started, just like you said with Floyd. And I'm trying to think about where is the point in the timeline of Floyd's career that is this the De La Hoya win? Is this what catapulted him? Yeah. And I think if we did this thought experiment with Floyd, I think I would have a lot of people that would be a lot closer to beating Floyd on my list than I do with Shakur. I know we're saying all these guys. I think Shakur, I said it before, Shakur is as close to an unbeatable fighter as there is in anyone in the sport today.
Wow.
And I don't know, even though we're talking about how well these guys could match up, I don't think I see any of them beating him. It's just his style is different and even different than Floyd. It's a very, very difficult style that he just shuts you off. The guy doesn't lose rounds. The fights are not, it's not even about being close. It's about winning. Nobody wins rounds.
Yeah, he went a long time without being outlanded in a round.
Yeah.
Crazy streak. All right, top three. Here we go. The nitty gritty.
Gary Antoine Russell, I got a three.
Ooh.
And I'm basing that off, dude, he's a workhorse. He just goes. And I mean, his engine for 12 rounds, his durability, his size. You've been around him when he's off fights, right?
Yeah.
He's big, dude.
Big boy.
He is big. He is strong. He's got power. He's aggressive. He comes forward. He comes from a boxing IQ family. And I don't think we've seen the best of him at all. But I think physically and mentally, he's mature enough that he can be where he deserves to be where he's at. But yeah, in terms of physicality, I think him and Muay Thai are the most physical guys on there. But Russell, he's all engine, man. He goes forward, and I was super impressed with the Ryo fight, and he's a problem for anybody.
Yeah, he could rough you up. Like, he's 5'10", he's got 69-inch reach. He's not exactly known for his boxing abilities, but he's not no slouch there. Like, no. he could box you, and the most important is he can rough you up, throw 90-100 punches around with some zip on it. You know, Zepeda, I don't think, has the same power as Russell. Would you agree with that?
No, definitely not. I don't think Russell is really a puncher.
No, he's not. So Russell, he can throw 80, 90, 100 punches. He did that in the Venezuela fight. We're not saying he would throw 100 against Shakur, but I think he has that varied offense. He could make it ugly in there. He can rough up Shakur and be very athletic in doing so. Top two, I think we process of elimination. We figured out who they are. But who's number two?
Keyshawn Davis, who could easily be number one. He looks so damn good against Jermaine Ortiz. The hesitance here on this is because they know each other and they say they're never going to fight. We'll see about that. We could end up having this fight down the line. Both these guys could go out there and split $40 million.
You've lowered it. Last week you said 50. People are getting upset, Chris.
Oh, sorry. What do you want? 100? What do you want? 10? What do you, no, they what were you guys like, want?
I think it's they 50, 50 million. What is this guy talking about?
Okay, fine. 10, whatever. Okay, these numbers to you guys listening means nothing. You don't know what they mean. You don't even know what these numbers mean.
A lot of money.
They're gonna go split tens of millions of dollars. Anyway, I think in terms of varied offense, timing, he has all of that. He's got power. He's got finishing instincts. You know, he's got the IQ. He's got it all. He really does have it all, and he's showing that more and more. I think the biggest asset, though, for Keyshawn Davis is something I just said, is his timing. I think his timing is what separates him from everyone else. I don't think it's necessarily his physicality or anything like that. He's very intuitive the way he lets his punches go. And that's the kind of thing that Shakur's got great timing as well, but his timing is all based on his range manipulation. So interesting fight. I still favor Shakur. Although we're not going to see this fight for a long time, if ever, but yeah, that's my number two.
The number one fighter you think has the best chance to defeat Shakur Stevenson is
Devin Haney. Big, long, athletic, high IQ, great jab, good feet, great endurance. It's all the things you need if you're even going to think about contending with Shakur Stevenson. And Haney's got it, man. And he also has the experience. He's got the maturity. He's been in with top flight guys. You spend 12 rounds with Lomachenko and it's a close fight. And yes, a lot of people argue that he lost the fight. I don't care. If you're neck and neck with Lomachenko, that speaks a lot to your ability to deal with, you know, high ring IQ. The knock to the argument is to say the same thing about Teofimo. He went 12 with Lomachenko and beat him and he had nothing for Shakur. But Devin's a different style. I think the biggest thing here is Devin's endurance. Teofimo's never been a real endurance guy. He tends to fade in rounds at the end of fights, asthma, explosiveness. Devin doesn't. So if you're going to be competitive with a guy like Shakur, I'm not saying the fight is going to be competitive or could be. I think the best chance would be someone like him. And I could switch one or two. And the reason I did it this way is because of how close Shakur and Keyshawn is. It's annoying that the two best guys possibly are just
their friendship annoys me.
Discussing, talking about fighting each other. But Devin doesn't have that problem. Devin will fight.
No, he called him out last night. I loved it. He tweeted, I want to fight Shakur. It's the biggest fight in boxing. I'll take Keyshawn next, either or, awesome. One or the other. The thing with the Shakur versus Devin conversation now is the rehydration clause. Shakur said, you're not coming into the ring higher than 157, 158. I do not like hydration clauses. I'm not going to say change my mind because I want to see this fight. I think Shakur, if you're going to fight Haney, you got to fight him at 147 without any hydration clauses.
Yeah, I would agree because I hate hydration clauses. I think they're ridiculous and dangerous.
If you're going to, there's some wiggle room, maybe more than 10 pounds.
There's a lot of wiggle room. There's a lot of ways to skin that cat because you can be, you know,
160.
Yeah, you can say, I can't be under 160. I can't be over 160 at this time of day because you could always do that. Like, because I can be like, all right, well, I can only gain 160, but cool. That's at 7 a.m. the next day. And after that, you can't text me. You can't check my weight, in which case I'll be in the ring 170 pounds, you know, like, so it's, there's a lot of ways to finagle and work with that negotiation. Not sure they'll be able to come to it, but whatever. Unfortunately,
catch weight. No catch weight.
No, it's got to be for the title. So part of the lore of this fight is that Shakur is going back to back into new divisions, fighting the guy to beat. Teofimo was the guy to beat at 140. He went up, he beats him, gets the title. Now he's a champion. He goes up to 147. The guy to beat at 147 is Devin Haney, and he's a titleist. It's got to be a title fight.
Yeah, I think it's the best. I think Haney has the best chance. I also think it's the most lucrative fight. And that when those two come together, then you have yourself a real fight here. I know there's some that's like, oh, it's going to be the most boring fight ever. It's going to be a technician.
No way.
Technical fight. I mean, Haney did only throw 23 punches around against Norman. Shakur.
But also, that wasn't a boring fight. It wasn't a boring fight. You don't have to be super busy.
It wasn't boring, and it wasn't like if it wasn't for the knockdown, it would have been a way more, a different perception.
But also, I think if it wasn't for the knockdown, I don't think Norman would have been as domesticated as he was.
That's true.
Because one, I think he was rocked for the rest of the fight. I don't think he ever truly recovered from that shot. But also, it made him super tentative because he realized he didn't think Devin could hurt him. And once Devin did and busted his nose, he's like, all right, I got to be really careful now. And by the time when you're careful with Devin, fight's lost.
Yeah.
The guy, he's too active. He's too quick. He jabs too much.
We left We left Tank Davis out of this experiment. You got to stop bringing up Tank Davis's name right now, guys. He is so far away from a boxing ring. He may never fight again. Before this news came out, before the latest arrest, this guy told me he doesn't want to box anymore. Wants to retire.
That was over a year ago.
Wants to retire. Doesn't want to box anymore. Massive legal issues. Like, very good chance he ends up in prison. Not
also,
part of
this. Also, if he does fight, he's going to have to. It's because he needs to fight. And then you're not getting the same guy that you got 2 years ago.
Well, if he says he's coming back, I mean, we can make this it's a thought experiment episode. So let's say Tank is back.
Mm-hmm.
Year and a half, almost 2 years out of the ring. Do you give him a shot against where do you put him on this list? Like, what are his chances against Shakur?
I don't even think he makes the top eight. No, he doesn't make the top eight.
Really?
No.
Even though he's got the best punching power of everyone listed.
I mean, Teo could punch if you don't land. And what's Tank's reach? 65?
Yeah, I don't know what his reach is. Not part of the experiment, so I didn't research it.
Yeah, Shakur is going to tower over him, height and reach. The timing. And he's just so inactive. He doesn't throw any punches.
Inactive in every sense of the word. Doesn't fight, doesn't throw punches. Shakur will jab and move and win rounds off of that alone.
Are we going to pretend he didn't lose to Lamont Roach? I got Lamont Roach at 8. So
67 and a half inch reach.
Longer than I thought.
Ryan Garcia not on your list.
No. I just...
There are people out there that say, you know what, that blistering speed, the height, the length, the power, with the speed, could get Shakur.
When anyone ever brings up that about Ryan, I'm just going to say Rolly Romero.
That was a different Ryan, though, bro. That wasn't the Ryan we're seeing now. Different Ryan.
Which Ryan are we seeing now?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Exactly. We never know. The best version of Ryan we've ever seen was Luke Campbell and Devin Haney. And the Devin Haney one, he didn't make weight and apparently had PEDs in his system. The Luke Campbell fight was so long ago, but that was the most impressive performance of his career.
Duarte was not bad.
Awesome. Duarte was bad. He just got a really good win. That was a really bad performance.
That Philly shell. Back.
It was not a Philly shell. That's not a Philly shell. That was a Philly turtle shell. That's what that was. That was a turtle shell. Your back.
Wild times. All right, there's a little thought experiment. We'll put up a graphic. We'll get ridiculed. People won't understand the rules. People won't understand what we were trying to go for here. Direct all your inquiries to Chris Algieri and his Twitter, where he never checks.
Right, exactly. So just go into the ether, as always.
Oh, man. Well, I'll get the brunt of it, let's be honest.
Of course. You're going to get the spillover.
I'll be fighting all your battles once again. before we say goodbye.
That's why I got to teach you how to box, because if anyone tries to actually come after you, you got to be able to know how to throw
hands. Well, I thought there was a couple of guys that said they were going to come to the party and find me.
Ooh.
Where were you guys? I was standing there.
Where were you guys?
I put my name and my face on everything I say.
Mm-hmm.
Boxing Twitter. A lot of guys can't say that on Boxing Twitter. Met a lot of fans at the event, though, that I had no clue who they were, and they had to explain to me who they were. And I was like, yes, I know who you are.
Yeah,
and
you've had long conversations with them.
They don't put their face to the name. I get it. It's not, everyone doesn't have to do that.
And it's funny when someone introduces themselves as their handle. Hey, I'm...
That's what Saturday was.
Yeah. I'm Left Hook Loco.
you don't recognize me, bro? It's me. It's Boxing for Life. I'm like, oh, shit. Yeah.
You don't recognize me.
It's like, no, I don't recognize you because you don't put your face on anything.
No, but we had a tremendous amount of positive interactions with people, even though we had a lot of people online saying they were going to come and cause a ruckus. And that.
Oh, yeah. I don't really put any thought into that. That goes to as we're doing these thought experiments and that's the theme of today's show. I have a notion that there are some people that are just so annoying online, but in person, they're delightful.
Yes. Well, I think you lose context with small text threads, too, because I feel like I do that sometimes, too. Like I'm talking to people and I'm just like, I kind of read something back. I'm like, it seems like a really dick way to put that. But I'm also like, not like that.
Got to get out and talk to people face to face.
Yeah. Touch grass, people. Go touch grass.
Right. Everyone at the party was a delight. Everyone was great.
Everyone was great.
And it wasn't any animosity that you have over keyboards. Before we say goodbye, there's a good fight at featherweight, title fight, Nick Ball versus Brandon Figueroa. Figueroa's coming off of two not-so-great performances. He had a loss versus Stephen Fulton, where he only threw 643 punches, which is very low for Brandon Figueroa's standards. And then he had a win over Joette Gonzalez, which was debatable, but he was over 1,000 punches thrown in the Figueroa fight. So which Figueroa is going to show up against Nick Ball, who is the wrecking ball, who's the champ at featherweight, very good fighter. It's a good fight. It's over on DAZN on Saturday afternoon here in the States.
You know, right away I'm like, good fight, but also then I'm thinking about Figueroa's last couple performances, and he's been so flat.
Depends on which Figueroa shows up.
But no, I think this is the Figueroa. I think this is what Figueroa is at this point. I think which he's one? Flat.
Flat?
The one we've seen recently, the flat
one. I agree.
I thought he lost to Joette Gonzalez, honestly. I thought Joette threw his butt off. I thought he won that fight. I think he was really lucky to get that win. And Nick Ball's a wrecking ball, dude. Nick Ball ain't flat, put it that way. He's a ball.
He's a ball.
he's getting shot out of a cannon from across the ring. He's going to bring it. He's the kind of guy, if you have any second thoughts, you're losing.
Any like, reservations?
You have to step into the fight with him like, here we go. this is
bro.
This is
imagine
it.
They shot him into the ring. Like, it's 1995 HBO, and they're coming up with different ways to market the sport and make it more fun.
And they have a circus cannon that you shoot him.
Yeah. What if we put him in a? We put him Lou DeBell and his team. What if we put him in a cannon and we shoot him into the ring?
As long as he's wearing a cape with a star on it, then let's go.
The wrecking ball. It's like a P.T. Barnum and Bailey vibe in there.
I'm into it. As long as he flips in with a cape and lands and, you know, doesn't.
Well, that can go wrong. I mean, he could miss the ring.
Yeah.
We don't want that.
That's the thing about, I always think about Arturo Gatti when he was walking in to fight Floyd Mayweather and they did the pyrotechnics and it looked like it blew out his eardrum right before he walked. He was like, oh!
Bro, I mean, obviously, like, the worst is Owen Hart. I mean, WWE guy. He fell.
Oh, yeah.
And died. They put, what's his name up on the... On the flying thing, Hamed.
Hamed on the flying carpet. Yeah.
And what's his name? Hated it. Go back and watch that on YouTube. Larry Merchant was steaming during that.
I feel like New York City would really hate that right now. I think the ideologues would really lose it if he.
I think that
wouldn't come over right very well.
No, Merchant hated it because it was like going against boxing and like it was just too much showboating. And you can hear, he did, you know, during the ring walk, he just talked the whole time, Merchant, through it, how much he hated it.
Yeah, he couldn't hide his emotions.
Couldn't help himself.
But Nazim was different, man. He fought like that. It's like, listen, it's one thing if you waste everyone's time and then go in there and fight like, you know, a lame fight. That guy went out there and entertained and fought like that.
Bro,
so I'm okay.
He made me fall in love with the sport. I was at him versus Kevin Kelly. I was at Nassim Hamed versus Kevin Kelly, 1997, 10 years old, MSG Theater with the lights at the MSG Theater on that roof. Watched him flip over the top rope, and then both of them just go to war, hit the canvas. And I said right then and there, I was like, I got to be part of the sport. Got to be part of it. It's the best sport in the world. With that being said, Nick Ball is a favorite of -370. Nick Ball by decision, -110. Nick Ball by stoppage. Can he stop Brandon Figueroa plus 230. Figueroa's never been stopped, but I'm looking at a declining Brandon Figueroa. I'm looking at like him looking at this. This is my last payday because I don't know how much he loves the sport.
Where's the fight?
It's over in UK.
I wouldn't be surprised if he stops him. I'm thinking about his brother. You know, the Figueroa brothers tend to have bad endings. You know, for whatever reason, they reach a certain height, and then, like, I mean, tip top. They were both tip top at one point, and then
he reached that height a while ago, Brandon.
Yeah,
and now he's just getting some. In my opinion, I think he's just getting those final title shots. It's crazy he's getting the title shot, but final paydays and name using name recognition here. A lot of people hyping up this fight because it has the potential to be a brawl. It has to, if Figueroa was switched on. And he wants to, he can fight on it. Because I'm just assuming, going off of his last performances, it's hard to say that he's not physically and mentally not there anymore. But if he's switched on and he's ready to go and he's throwing 90, 100 punches around, then we have an awesome fight. And that could be a thriller. That's why I see a lot of people excited.
Yeah, I can see it. Because if you understand Figueroa, he's durable. He's shown to be durable and he'll fight back. So... yeah, there is a path to seeing this as like a really good, exciting fight. I just don't.
Yeah, we'll see. That's Saturday over on my official pick is, I'm going to go bald by stoppage. I think I'm going to put some money on that, plus 230. All right, everyone, have a great weekend. That's pretty much the only big fight this weekend, unless I'm not seeing anything else out there.
Got to love boxing, right? You have a weekend with six cards on it, and then... yeah, 3 weeks of barren wasteland.
Yeah, we couldn't put Bakram this weekend. You see, Bakram is suing, or not suing, but official petition because one of the referee judges had round 12, 10-10.
Mm.
One of the other judges had a 10-9 for Bakram. If that judge who had a 10-10 had a 10-9 for Bakram, it would have been a draw. He holds on to his belt.
Wow. We'll see where that gets him.
Nothing's going to happen.
that was what I was meant by that. Let's see. Maybe
he throw him a bone. He gets another fight. Maybe I still think Barao should fight Mutazaliyev. Don't forget about us. Fight. Cool. Don't you dare forget about us.
Loser leaves the top 10.
Yeah. Maybe ring will do it. That's what part of ring's allure. All right, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the thought process. I hope you enjoyed our ramblings about where we think the sport is headed. Enjoy the weekend. Super Bowl. The big game.
Maybe
Sunday.
There's no fights.
What's your top three food that has to be at a Super Bowl party?
I don't celebrate Super Bowl. Sorry. Don't care.
What kind of red-blooded American are you?
The Giants are in. I'm a New Yorker. I'm a Giants fan. I don't care.
It's one of the least... I don't give a damn about the Super Bowl. Patriots, Seahawks. I mean, I'm still going to watch, obviously. I would say you got to have a pizza. I would say you got to have a 6-foot hero. And I would say you got to have wings.
I would have those first two not on the list. I would definitely wings.
A dip?
I would say ribs. Got to have some ribs.
Had ribs for lunch.
I need ribs. They were delicious.
That's why I'm doing this. Had ribs for lunch. Ribs over wings?
No, well, wings definitely.
Wings definitely. Ribs. No pizza.
No pizza.
6 foot hero?
6 foot hero is a good idea, but no.
Like, I grew up always having a 6 foot hero for the Super Bowl, and then my mom would put all the leftovers into like a giant Ziploc bag, and we just bring it to school the next day, and just like that was it, or eat it for a snack.
I'm going ribs, nachos, and wings. So, again, you got everything.
Good. Yeah, you got to have dip.
Nachos. Super Bowl Sunday nachos with the ground beef and the jalapenos. Yeah.
Yes.
And
yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yes. The cheese. Oof.
Yes. Are you having a party or doing anything or no?
I forgot that it was even Super Bowl weekend and then my buddy down here invited me. So I guess I'm going to make a big nacho platter and bring it over.
With that being said, Chris will be bringing nachos to the function.
Yeah. That's my RSVP, Kate. I'll see you there with nachos.
I think the Seahawks are going to get it done. Sam Darnold, I'm rooting for you. Former Jets quarterback. Seems like a good guy.
Did I ever tell you I got to see them practice at their facility back in Jets? Seattle? Back in the day? No, the Seahawks.
Oh, wow. What were you doing up in the Pacific Northwest?
It was a sponsor that I had. It was a coffee brand. Chimera Coffee.
Oh, my God.
excellent coffee brand. This is back in like 2016, 17. And we would go on like, as like a brand ambassador, they would bring me on like trips to go meet.
But that sounds amazing.
It was so much fun.
Considering how much we love coffee.
Oh, dude. Drinking nonstop cold brew and coffee and just like running around, meeting people. We did a bunch of podcasts. We did Mind Pump podcasts. That was like my first like podcast experience, like a big one. And my buddy, you know, from the coffee company, he's like, hey, man, you're really good at that. You should do this like more often. And I was like,
like 10 years, I'll join a podcast.
Yeah.
But now it's all energy drinks. Like no one's giving out coffee endorsements anymore. I would love a coffee endorsement. Anyone out there,
we should actually make our own coffee. That's actually what we should do. That's what everybody's doing.
Well, we got to make merch too. Apparently, some guy handed you some merch at a Pro Box.
Right here. Check this out.
I wore it the other day. It's amazing.
Oh, it's great.
Look at that.
Look at that embroidery.
And I talked to a few people at the party. They said they would wear merch. They would wear our merch. Not as long as our faces weren't on. I agree with that. No faces on the merch.
Yeah, I agree. So my fight shirts, I used to put my face on it, and then I realized it was redundant to wear my own fight shirt with my face on it. So I took the face off, which people complain about. But yeah, we don't need our faces on shirts, but the brand name is good.
Next party we'll have a merch tent or table.
Merch table.
That was missing from the party. All right, everyone, enjoy Super Bowl Sunday. We'll be back on Monday with some more hijinks. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs.
Monster Energy. Everybody knows White Monster, Zero Ultra. That's the OG. It kicked off this whole zero sugar energy drink thing. But Ultra is a whole lineup now. You've got Strawberry Dreams, Blue Hawaiian, Sunrise, and Vice Guava. And they all bring the Monster Energy punch. So if you've been living in the white can, branch out. Ultra's got a flavor for every vibe. And every single one is zero sugar. Tap the banner to learn more.